You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and pleased to be here tonight, the second of three big nights for President Obama and Governor Romney. Will the president call Romney on his lies? Will Romney try to stuff, you know, serial four or five lies into a single sentence so that the president could only answer one and the rest stand? Will Candy Crowley speak up and say something? Here's what she said when asked that question this morning by Wolf Blitzer. What do you do if you say, well, Governor, that $5 trillion tax cut, and he starts blithering about, hey, did you see that great picture of Paul Ryan yesterday washing those clean pots in the soup kitchen? Here's what she had to say.
If the town hall person asks apples and they answer oranges, I go, wait a second. The question was about apples. Let's talk about that. So there's, you know, opportunity for follow-up to kind of get them to drill down on the subjects that these folks want to learn about in the town hall.
Oh, my goodness. The Republicans are, I mean, there's an absolute feeding frenzy, a mania, a panic going on the Reich, in the blogosphere over there. About Candy Crowley's not going to be a potted plant. We like the potted plant. We want Jim Lehrer back. We want another potted plant. We didn't, you know, active moderator. Oh, you know, that didn't work so well. We need a potted plant. I got to tell you, just personally, Candy Crowley has always been one of my favorite reporters. She's solid. She's thoughtful. She's analytic. I have no idea what her politics are. I noticed earlier in the chat room, one of the folks said, Candy Crowley's a Republican. I'm pretty sure that, you know, like most people who are in that kind of a position, you know, mainline large network news reporters, they don't register with the party. They don't take positions. And some of them don't even vote. You know, Edward R. Murrow, as I recall, famously refused to vote because he did not want to be taken as a partisan, and I'm just reporting the news. So I'm not saying that Candy Crowley doesn't, but don't know. So what do you think should happen? By the way, our show today, Governor Ted Strickland, a former governor of Ohio, is going to drop by in about 10 minutes, just for a few quick words on what's going on with the Obama campaign. He's the co-chair of the national campaign. And Curtis Sliwa is going to be with us at the top of the next hour, representing the right. We're going to talk about, you know, what is a win and what's a lose, or what's a loss in the debate? Should we even be using those terms? I'm frankly, and you all know this, I've said this many times, I'm really offended by the boxing match, football game kind of perspective, stereotype, analysis, whatever you want to call it. On this whole debate thing, I think that it's far more important that we have conversations about the topics. Lawrence O'Donnell has recently been going off on, what I think is a brilliant and very thoughtful analysis. He points out, you know, presidents, when they're deciding whether or not to kill bin Laden or, you know, and to help with the Libya invasion or whatever, they don't do it standing all alone at a podium without a single piece of paper. They got their briefing papers with them. They've got their consultants with them. They've got, you know, somebody doesn't say, okay, sir, do we do it or not? And you've got 10 seconds to reply. And at the end of the 10 seconds, we're going to ask the vice president his opinion. That's not how it works. And I think Lawrence O'Donnell is so, I rarely take other people on other networks' talking points and echo them on this show, as you well know. I mean, frankly, I've got enough of my own opinions. But, you know, he's been there, he's done that, and it really, you know, when I heard and saw his analysis, I thought, you know, he is so right on this. The kind of debates that we're doing doesn't serve us as a nation well. It serves television well. It works really well for the television format. Although I think that, you know, something a little more complex could also work well for the television format. So, you know, where do we go with this? How does this work? We'll see how this all shakes out. So, anyhow, let's pick up some call. My thoughts. I want Candy Crowley to hold these guys, both of them, to account. If either one of them starts prevaricating, I hope if the president gives a 25-word answer with polysyllabic words in it that could be reduced down to four two-syllable words, that Candy Crowley will ask him to do so. I doubt that'll happen. Certainly, he did that a number of times in the first debate. He would give an answer that was like this long, thoughtful, complex answer when he could have just, given a bumper sticker and basically won, as it were. Or at least, I use the word won as in the average undecided vote. We're down to about, 10% of the American electorate not knowing who they're going to vote for. The people who are either stupid or are just like, so busy, and you'd have to be insanely busy not to have any idea what's going on in politics. So I think, by and large, it's stupid is my vote. But anyhow, let's get some of your calls here. Ralph in Patton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ralph, what's on your mind today?
I was referencing to oil prices.
Mm-hmm.
With the price of gas over $4 and heating oil going up to close to $3.75, why are we exporting so much oil?
Because it's very, very profitable for the oil companies to refine oil here in the United States, where they can just dump all the toxic chemicals into our air and our water and, let our people get cancer downwind from the big refineries in Texas down through Louisiana, the Cancer Alley down there. Very profitable for them to do that, and then ship that gasoline offshore, overseas, and thus create a shortage in the United States and drive the price up. It's all about making money for the oil companies. These companies make billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in profits, and they pay no income taxes. That's really what it's all about. I mean, it's really simple, Ralph. They don't give a rat's patootie about what's best for the United States. What they're all about is saying, okay, this is the thing that's going to make the most money for the oil companies. And jacking up, and there's two pieces to that. One, jacking up oil prices by exporting. Most people probably don't know it, although we talk about it a lot on this program, but you will not hear this in the corporate media. The number one export from this country right now, we used to export cars, we used to export steel, we used to export transistor radios, we used to export TVs. Now the number one export is gasoline and diesel fuel, refined oil products. We import oil from Saudi Arabia. You and I pay the tax bill to get it from there to here. That is to, for the U.S. Navy to protect our shipping lanes. We pay for the cancers and all the diseases that come from the refining process. The Koch brothers make the profit and all the other big refineries, and then they ship it offshore. Have I answered your question, Ralph, or did I miss something here?
You've answered my question, but why build more pipelines and allow more permits
It's really simple. The pipeline, there's already a Keystone XL pipeline that goes from the tar sands tar sands pits, I guess they are. This is open mining up in Canada that goes all the way down to the Midwest. It stops near St. Louis, and then it goes off to the east toward Ohio. And they refine that gasoline, and it's sold in the middle middle part of the United States, in the Midwest. And what they want to do, and thanks a lot for the call, Ralph, what they want to do is be able to say, we're going to take that pipeline and run it all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. And everybody says, oh, gee, that's going to be more oil for us, more gas for us. No. It goes to the Gulf of Mexico. They can put it on tankers and ship it to England.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Which is, by the way, what TransCanada, the foreign corporation that's doing this, has already said they intend to do. They have said, not me, they have said, they expect gas prices to go up as a result of this in the U.S.
I'll
Talk media for the sane among us. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on SiriusXM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio, on every U.S. military base in the world, simulcast as television on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide into an additional 55 million homes on the Free Speech TV network. Governor Ted Strickland is with us, the former governor of the great state of Ohio, 2007 to 2011. He is the national campaign co-chair of the Obama for president or for re-election or whatever it's called, the Obama campaign, BarackObama.com. Governor, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. I'm curious what your thoughts are on what's going to happen tonight.
Well, I think this is going to be a very important night in the evolution of this campaign. I think the president will be very strong, and I think he will hold Governor Romney accountable if he tries to do what he did in that first debate, and that was to reinvent himself and to basically be untruthful about what his positions were and have been.
Well, the Romney campaign has already, you know, made that as an article of faith, that that's what they're doing. I mean, yesterday Paul Ryan shows up at a soup kitchen after it's already closed and the dishes are already cleaned, and you know, he and his wife throw on aprons and start rewashing clean dishes for the photo op. The guy who runs the soup kitchen is hysterical. You know, I didn't even invite them in.
Do they?
I'm sorry.
They don't know how to fake compassion.
Right.
I mean, you know, that was in my state of Ohio in Youngstown. And to go into a soup kitchen, without making prior arrangements when everyone had apparently already left and the cleanup had already been done, put on an apron and pretend to be cleaning some pots and pans in order to get a picture taken is, you know, he ought to be embarrassed.
And you have seen President Obama in the last little bit here. Is he up and energetic and all that?
Well, I have not seen him. I'm here in New York. The president, I think he's probably already arrived here. But I have not seen him. I've talked to some of his major staff people, and they say he's
ready to go.
Looking forward to this opportunity tonight.
Great.
And
Governor, if I may ask a question that's related more to overall political strategy, but how elections work here in the United States, that I think is frankly is concerning a lot of our callers, a lot of our viewers and listeners. Back in 1980, a fellow by the name of Paul Weyrich or Weyrich, co-founded the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which has sponsored a series of laws, these voter suppression laws around the country. He also co-founded the Heritage Foundation. And in 1980, he ran Ronald Reagan's direct mail campaign, which was a major part of his campaign. And he also worked on the Bush Senior and the Bush Junior campaigns. He died about 2 years ago. And this is just a 20-second clip of Paul Weyrich speaking in 1980 to a group of high-level senior Republican activists who were also affiliated with a Christian coalition that was emerging at that point in a Republican church. Listen to this, please.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
There you have it. I mean, the guy who founded ALEC, who founded the Heritage Foundation, one of the most powerful Republicans for three decades in the United States, our leverage in the elections goes up as the voting populace goes down. We're hearing stories about 80,000 people knocked off the polls in Florida, 200,000 in Colorado, all over the country. This in Ohio, it's going on in your state. What are we to do about this?
Well, we got a good court decision in Ohio today. The Supreme Court decided to reject our Secretary of State's appeal regarding the 3 days prior to November the 6th.
The early voting.
And so thankfully, we will have the ability for our people to vote on the Friday, Saturday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday leading up to the Tuesday, November 6th election. But you're absolutely right. I believe the leadership of the Republican Party is really afraid of the American voter, and so they're doing whatever they can to suppress the vote. And in some cases, I think they are imposing restrictions that, in my judgment at least, are reprehensible, and the courts should absolutely reject them.
This is
a shameful part of the Republican agenda these days, to try to keep legitimate Americans from having access and being able to easily vote.
Right.
I mean, the whole voter ID travesty in Pennsylvania, cutting back on voting hours in states, it's akin to behaviors that I thought we had left into the
is this Jim Crow all over again?
Jim Crow, different tactics, different methods, but the same motivation, and the same goal is to try to deprive citizens of their ability to cast their vote for the person of their choice. That's a sad thing. And if I were a moderate or even a conservative within the Republican Party, I would really be ashamed of what my party was doing. I suspect there are good moderates and conservatives out there within the Republican Party who feel as if their party has been, quite frankly, taken over.
Yeah.
A few of them
have spoken up. I'm with you. And you said the magic word, courts. The next president is going to appoint several Supreme Court justices in all probability. This is a big deal. Governor Strickland, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We will be back with more of your thoughts, my thoughts, the news of the day, as we head up to this debate tonight here on the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. What will Candy Crowley bring to the debate tonight? How's the president going to do? What's he going to have to do? How's this going to play out? Tony in Los Angeles. Hey, Tony, hang on just a second. Got to click the other button here. Tony, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I don't know if I can take another 27 lies in half an hour, so I might actually not watch tonight.
I think
I'm going to call it. Republicans will say they've won, and Democrats will just kind of let it go past them again.
Well, what I thought, I get that, and thanks for sharing that. What I noticed was that when Obama basically, in terms of style and whatnot, got his butt handed to him by Mitt Romney, Democrats were first to say, yeah, this wasn't such a good night. On the other hand, when Joe Biden ate the lunch of Paul Ryan, I mean, just ate his lunch. I mean, it was incredible. All the Republicans and all the right wing talk shows and everybody else, they were all hysterical about the moderator was too involved and things like that. I mean, they were unwilling to say, yeah, our guy didn't do so great. I find that a particularly interesting difference between these two sides. Mike in Maplewood, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I feel like the election is slipping away, and when you make puerile comments like calling the right wing the Reich, it doesn't help.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much for your advice. I will continue to call the right wing the Reich. I don't consider that puerile. I think it's funny. Susan, in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just want to make a couple of points and ask a question, and then I'll hang up. Today on AMI, Democracy Now!, they went into the document that's signed by both parties, into the details.
Right, for the debate tonight.
It was not pleasant. Two men run the League of Women Voters, And that happens where I live. I'm in the Orange County of the state of Washington. I live in Bellingham, but Whatcom County is so conservative that the county, the man who ran the county, who is liberal, got a position on the board rather than trying to run things at this point, which is good because there he did beat out a very conservative person. But given those kinds of things, why would you think Candy from CNN that equivocates all over is going to be a great moderator?
I think that she has, I may be proven wrong on this. Time will tell. But I've always felt that Candy Crowley was actually a good journalist. And, you know, a good journalist has a certain set of instincts for when somebody's lying and when they're not, when somebody's trying to avoid the question and when they're not. And, frankly, you know, Jim Lehrer didn't do that. I hope Candy Crowley does. We'll see. Jeff in Potomac, Maryland. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'd like your comment on this one question. If Mitt Romney is such a stiff, such a liar, such a flip-flopper, and so bad for this country, vulture capitalist, et cetera, how come at this late date as of today, the polls still show Romney's tied for the lead nationally, and in the lead in many of the battleground states, including Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, Colorado, and New Mexico?
Well, I think there's a couple of really simple answers to that, Jeff. And it's a pretty and thanks for asking the question. But the answers are pretty straightforward. Number one, advertising works. You've got outside groups that are spending over $1 billion. I mean, Karl Rove spending $400 million. The Chamber of Commerce is spending over $100 million. You've got the Koch brothers spending money. You got Shelley Adelson advertising. There's a reason why you turn on the TV and the big pharmaceutical companies are rolling out new drugs. Everybody knows about Lunesta and Viagra and Cialis and whatever, all these, if you're having a hard time sleeping, whatever. It works. There's a reason why advertising is a multi-billion-dollar industry. I used to teach advertising. I owned an ad agency. I ran an ad agency. I can tell you it works. So number one, you spend $1 billion on advertising, you're going to get a lot of results. Number two, you've got a lot of people who simply identify themselves as Republicans. They've done it since the Reagan years, the old Reagan Democrats. And, you know, they don't pay that much attention to politics. They somehow think that Republican equals strong on defense and likes NASCAR. History doesn't show it. In fact, they think Republicans are in favor of, manufacturing here in the United States. A new study out just in the last couple of days here. Democratic presidents from World War II to today, Democratic presidents produced under their occupancy of the White House, we produced 7 million new jobs, manufacturing jobs, just manufacturing jobs, not jobs in total, manufacturing jobs in the United States. Under Republican presidents, we lost 9 million. So you'd think that people would wake up. But, you know, it takes a while. And number three, you got single issue voters. You got people who are like, you know, they're afraid of the gay or they don't like people whose skin is not lily white. And the Republicans have gotten really, really good. They've fine tuned this down to an art at reaching out to those people, speaking to those people in code and sometimes very explicitly and bringing them to the polls. Jerry in New York City. Hey, Jerry, what's up? Or in Amityville, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, well, it's Long Island. Amityville is on Long Island, yes.
Okay.
Okay. With respect to Social Security and Medicare, since Mr. Romney has said that he supports changes to Social Security and Medicare, such as means testing beneficiaries and also raising the age of eligibility, therefore, I'd like to more specifically and definitively know from the president whether or not he'd support these changes to Social Security and Medicare simply in order to cut a deal with Republicans. I think he's been a little bit ambiguous on the issue.
Yeah.
And also with respect to cuts to either Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security from both of the candidates, I'd like to know what percentage of cuts they'd be willing to agree to, because Paul Ryan, for example, has proposed cutting Medicaid by as much as 33% to 50%.
Right, and he suggested totally privatizing Social Security. I'm with you, Jerry. I would like to see the president or hear the president come out and make a strong, unequivocal statement about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. I think all three of those programs are smaller than they should be. They're underfunded, and their benefit programs are not as good as they should be, and all, you know, and you can track all of that back to Republican opposition, all three of them. Republicans, ever since Social Security was put into place in 1935, have been calling that socialism, and now they want to change, I mean, you know, they want to privatize Social Security. The Republicans drilled all kinds of holes in Medicare, you know, opportunities for private corporations to step in. So AARP stepped up to the bat as the insurance agent, and United Healthcare in large part, although there are a few others, said, hey, yeah, we'll sell policies to fill those holes. And so now there's, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in profits being made and revenue being made with Medicare Advantage, which is just crazy. It shouldn't even exist. And Medicaid, which is, you know, health care for poor people, is being rolled into Obamacare, thank God. And, you know, eventually, hopefully, there'll be no need for it. But, yeah, I'd like to hear the president make a very strong statement about this. Dolores in Paso Robles, California. Hey, Dolores, what's up?
Yes, Tom, at the beginning of the program, you were talking about undecided voters.
Mm-hmm.
And I have something that might help you get a hold of that. The book, The Republican Brain, by Chris Mooney, have you heard of it?
Yeah, I've read a piece of it, a fairly large piece of it, and I've had Chris Mooney on this program. These are people who are drawn, who are repelled by ambiguity and drawn to certainty or simplistic explanations. Which doesn't mean that they're simple people. In some cases, they're brilliant people. It's just this is a temperament issue, and they are drawn to authority figures and authoritarian figures, and are repelled by. Or are frightened, frankly, is probably the correct word, frightened by the possibility of democracy, of consensus kind of decision making.
Well, he was on Link TV, and the thing that I wanted to say is the Republican brain is wired a certain way. The Democrat brain is wired a certain way.
Yep.
So those two groups have no problem picking their side.
Yep.
The undecided have partly both wiring in their brain. And so it takes a point for them to decide which issues are going to trigger them to go one way or the other. That's the way I understood what he said.
Yeah, well, that's a possible explanation, assuming that people are exposed to an entire universe of issues. I would suggest to you that undecided voters at this point in time are just very, very low information voters. If they don't know the difference between these two candidates, or if they're just, you know, listening to the buffed up, polished off talking points, particularly that the Republican Party has been putting out. I mean, there have been so many clear debunkings and calling out his lies of the Republican talking points. You know, the Republican agenda is really simple. It's very, very simple. It's do what's best for the billionaires, do what's best for the really, really rich people in this country, and that will then produce prosperity for the country. It will trickle down to everyone else. They've been saying this overtly for a long, long time. The Democratic strategy is the one that was advanced by Thomas Jefferson. Give the most power to the most people and make sure that, you know, and also by Franklin Roosevelt. You know, a necessitous man is not a free man. If you want to have freedom, if you want to have freedom in the United States, you have to have life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. To have that, you have to have health care, food, and housing, basically, and a job. Thank you, Dolores.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And some person listening to the program, calling into the program today, actually, Shana is going to select our winner for Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People, autographed by the author.
Well, that's a brilliant observation. Do you have any other helpful opinions?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Joan, listening on AM 760 in Netherlands,
hi, Tom.
Colorado. Hey, Joan, what's up?
All of a sudden my volume went goodbye. I just want to disagree with you calling us independents low-information voters.
Well, I'm not saying that if somebody is not declaring a party affiliation, they're a low information voter or that they're dumb or whatever. What I'm saying is that if somebody at this point in the election has not bothered to figure out what's going on with these candidates and what the stakes are for the future, then they are a low information voter.
Because I've always been an independent ever since my first vote with George McGovern.
Right.
And I have largely voted Democratic, yes, and I am, you know, local elections, I pick and choose whoever I think is better.
Right.
At this point, I probably would say that, you know, I will never, ever vote Republican again just because of what their party stands for. But I don't feel that being a Democrat is necessarily a good thing, because that party can be, the Democratic Party can be just as bad.
Well, here's where you're half right and half wrong, respectfully. If you live in a state that has open primaries, where anybody can vote in the primary, then you have the luxury of being an independent and not registering as a Democrat or a Republican, and still being able to vote in the Democratic primary if you care about, you know, the candidates that they're putting up. If you, on the other hand, live in a closed primary state where you have to be registered as a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary, or as a Republican to vote in the Republican primary, or Green or Libertarian or whatever, then you have lost part of your franchise. And so I would submit to you that there's two reasons why, particularly in a closed primary state, but in general,
Colorado is.
Yeah, it is number one, because it's a closed primary state and you've declared yourself an independent, you've lost your ability to help decide who the candidates ultimately are going to be by voting in the primary. And that doesn't seem to me like, you know, such a great thing. And then number two, by being an independent, you've also given up the ability to show up at a Democratic Party meeting and say, I want to run for precinct committee person. I want to help take over this party. I want to turn this party into a progressive party like it used to be and has been at various times in its past, and really make some change. And you've got to be registered as a Democrat to do that. I mean, you can probably do that the day that you show up at the meeting, but you know, I would encourage that kind of activism. But I'm not dissing you because you're an independent. I spent much of my political life as an independent as well. And I've said in 2000, I voted for Ralph Nader, but I was in a state where I knew, and I lived in Vermont. I knew that Vermont was going to go for Al Gore, so it wasn't going to hurt him at all. And the Green Party is doing great things at the local level with regard to instant runoff voting. You know, one of my single issue obsessions, but yeah, but I get it, Joan. And I didn't mean to diss you. I'm talking about people who I am guessing, Joan, that at this moment in time, on today here on the 16th of October, 16th of October 2012, that you know who you're going to vote for president. You don't even have to say it, but I'm guessing you know, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm talking about the people who, when they call them up on the polls, the surveys, and they say, do you know who you're going to vote for? The person says, no, I don't. And that's who's filling the room tonight. That Candy Crowley is taking questions from undecided voters, which almost by definition is either stupid people or people who are very, very low, you know, who have not gathered much political information at all. Now, there's nothing, you know, arguably there's nothing wrong with not having a lot of political information. You know, if you were to ask me questions about the NFL, I would not be able to answer them. I don't follow sports. And so, you know, you could say I'm sports stupid. I'm sports illiterate. I'd be the first to raise my hand and say that. The only team I ever really followed was the Detroit Tigers, because I grew up in Michigan and I love baseball. And that was pretty much it. But the problem is that it doesn't, you know, who wins the World Series, you know, is not going to affect the future of America. Who becomes president of the United States? Who becomes the, you know, which party takes the House and the Senate? That is going to affect the future of America, and not just the future of America, but my future, your future, our children and grandchildren's future. And that's a big deal. And so that's why I think it's frankly a tragedy that they're letting these low information voters make these decisions. Joan, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Cora in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Cora, what's on your mind?
Well, when everybody's eating their dinner tonight, I would like them to think about pink slime. Now, IBP was legally able to produce this very unappetizing product, and what I'm suggesting is that the Ryan Romney ticket, or Romney Ryan, would like to do is be the team of the pink slime ticket, because they're going to slash government and just have a big bloated, you know.
They're not going to slash government, Cora. They want to increase military spending so much that they're
defense contractors, but everything else will be privatized.
Right.
Plus deregulated. So, you know, we are going to have the equivalency of pink slime in every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. By the way, I think it's ABC, one of the big news networks, is being sued for millions by the pink slime manufacturers for reporting that story. Fascinating stuff. Thanks a lot, Cora, for the call. Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob, what's up? Bob? Bob, are you on the air? You're not. Okay, let's go to Mark in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Oh, not too much, Tom. I was just calling to tell you, you know, I've spent a fair amount of time playing poker, and I've learned tells on people. And
right.
I have a very interesting tell for Mitt Romney. A good way to tell if he's lying is basically if his lips are moving.
Here's the thing that I find amazing about Mitt Romney is that he has this frozen face ability that I have seen on very, very few people. Back when Louise and I ran the Community for Abused Kids, and we would deal with very abusive parents, many of whom were sociopaths. Occasionally, you'd see this, or you'd see it in people who had spent a lot of time in and out of jail, and you know, the ability to just like not show any, not just not show any emotion on their face, but not even give any clues to their thinking process. Their eyes don't move up or down. They don't move from side to side. They keep their eyes straight ahead, and they keep this frozen smile on their face. That's a very, very rare thing. And in my experience, that's an indication of somebody that you should be very, very wary of, very careful of. So keep an eye on it tonight. We'll be back 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Curtis Sliwa is with us. He's the CEO and founder of the Guardian Angels, a radio host on AM 970. CurtisSliwa.com is the website. AM 970 is in New York, isn't it, Curtis?
That's exactly right. You can reach out and touch me wirelessly. I love that. It titillates me.
Okay. Curtis, from your point of view, what will make a winner in tonight's debate? I've seen, Fox was... and all the conservative pundits seem to think that Joe Biden actually didn't win against Paul Ryan because he smiled too much. And the liberals, I think by and large, feel that Mitt Romney did win against the president in the first debate, because he was successful in getting 27 lies out in 38 seconds, none of which were challenged. So that's my analysis. What's yours? What's going to make a winner in this thing?
Tom, I'm feeling good because Long Island's own Lindsay Lohan has decided not to cast a ballot with her other trendoid, freakazoid friends and go with Obama. She's for Romney. And knowing that Snooki of Jersey Shore is for Romney, I think I'm feeling good, at least about the subcultural vote on this issue. But I think...
Wait a minute. You're saying that
Who's filled with the feeling that he can take this president out. Unfortunately, there are going to be a lot of people who get in between both candidates, and we may not really see anything that amounts to any kind of a debate other than answering questions.
So you're worried that Candy Crowley won't be a potted plant like Jim Lehrer was?
Oh, no, she won't. Remember, I read she was going through transcendental meditation, the Maharishi Yogi. She was channeling him. She's going to be able to separate these two. But let's face it, you've got people who are going to be asking normal questions and sometimes some bizarre questions that may take both candidates off of the train of thought that we'd like them to be.
I don't disagree with you, Curtis. And here's the thing that astounds me. These are going to be questions from people who are undecided voters. I have to say, at this, here we are, three weeks and change out from the election. Anybody who's an undecided voter at this point in time, in my mind, is an idiot. Why would they fill the room with idiots and let them ask questions of the candidates?
Well, Tom, I take a little different point of view. I say, look, we're paying for these debates, and there are people who have legitimate concerns and questions about both candidates. Let's face it, neither has been overwhelming even to their own supporters. So
I don't think that's true.
5% that they estimate that are out there, they could go in either direction. They're entitled to hear what both have to say tonight, and then in the next one with Bob Schieffert. And then obviously with the barrage of lies that come from both sides with the packets and the 30-second sound bites that they approve of. So I think the debate format is the best way to just see them juxtapositioned against one another.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with that. But do you, I mean, you're a radio talk show host. Do you have any callers who are calling up saying, I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for?
Oh, look, I can't even find the one Obama supporter on my station, although I
That's
have
a
partner at night. I do two shows. I tell my partner, look, I'm going to keep an open mind because I'm not thrilled with either right now. Too many lies are coming out, too many distortions, and I just
want to be able it's a real problem with Mitt Romney doing that, isn't it?
Hopefully not in 30-second sound bites that can answer some of the very complicated problems that we're all facing.
Yeah, and speaking of all those lies and distortions that are coming out of the Romney campaign, how do you think either candidate should deal with the other candidate if they say something that's patently untrue?
Oh, boy, you slipped me a Mickey there, Tom. You say the Romney campaign. What about the Benghazi lie? What about, oh, it was all about the film. It was all about the film. Hey, come on. That was such a blatant lie. And now finally.
Curtis, I'm really disappointed to hear you. You and I have known each other for a long time. I'm frankly astounded and disappointed to hear you try to use the death of two security officers and two U.S. diplomats, who did have a security detail, by the way, they were killed, as a political hit against the president. That would be like my saying George W. Bush is responsible for 9/11. You know, George W. Bush, when he was asked who was responsible for 9/11, said it was Osama bin Laden. The people who killed the two State Department officials and their two security guards, those were local Al-Qaeda affiliated people. We pretty much know who they are, and they're going to be taken out. Do you really think this is going to be the Monica thing? Is this going to be the thing that the Republicans are going to try and impeach Obama about
term? Are you predicting that 48 hours before the last votes are cast, that some Tomahawk missile, some missile somewhere under the ocean in the Mediterranean will reach out and take care of the Al-Qaeda people responsible for the attack of the consulate? Look,
I think there's a good chance they've already been taken care of.
Mistakes when it's come to Al-Qaeda. We've been a dollar short and a day late sometimes. Why couldn't the president, through the secretary to the United Nations, Rice, who seemed to be the spokesperson for a while, just acknowledge, look, they caught us with our guard down. It won't happen again. We'll make sure it never happens again, period. The American people understand that, but no, we got to blame this crazy, nutty film by this bank embezzler for the reason.
Well, again, Curtis, Curtis, can you hear me?
You don't believe that.
Can you hear me? Curtis?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure because
you don't really believe that, Tom. Come on, let's be honest. We know Al-Qaeda.
Curtis, I've got the timeline here in front of me. If you want, we can go through the timeline. There's no there. If this is what you guys have, if this is what you think the Republican Party is going to win on, these four diplomats were killed by terrorists, and somehow that's going to turn the American presidential election, I think that's a tragic commentary on your political positions in the Republican parties. Curtis?
Hello.
Yeah. I mean, we have the more rich people than any country in the world. We get the lowest taxes on rich people of any other developed country in the world. We've got more children living in poverty than any other developed country in the world. Tell me that isn't a big deal.
Oh, it is, and both of these candidates love rich people when it comes to getting donations. I have never seen so much harvesting of so much money from so many rich people in any campaign. Tom, you would have to admit it, both candidates have said no to any of the restraints that existed before the public matching funds.
Actually, not true. President Obama and his
rich people into ATM machines.
It's not true, Curtis. You know, President Obama in his State of the Union address 2 years ago called for Citizens, you know, called out Citizens United as a disaster. On multiple occasions, he and various other Democrats and people have, in his campaign have said, you know, we need some at least transparency. A piece of legislation which is supported by over 80% of the American public, which would simply say, you know, if the Koch brothers buy an ad, they have to put their name at the end of it rather than run it through some front group like Karl Rove's laundering operation. That, you know, if they're going to buy it, if they're going to try and buy an election, we have to know who they are. That, you know, the Republicans are blocking all of this stuff. This is Republican. Republicans are you guys are the ones cozying up to the billionaires. And how does an oligarchy help
Barack
America?
Barack Obama is no Mahatma Gandhi here. You know,
no, he's taking money from rich people, too. But the rich people who are giving money to Obama.
Come on. The guy is out there with billionaires and gazillionaires himself, whining, dining, and profiling.
And those people are going to see their taxes go up as a result of giving money to him.
Well, and
whereas Shelley Adelson comes right out and says, when he gives money to Republicans, he's making an investment.
To make sure that they've taken care of the winner one way or the other. You know that, Tom.
Shelley Adelson comes right out and says, when he's bankrolling a politician, he's making an investment.
Aren't they all? Aren't they all?
I believe that the people, you know, when Bill Maher gave $1 million to the Obama campaign, he was doing it because he wanted a better America, not because he wanted a lower tax rate. I don't think Shelley Adelson with casinos off the coast of China bringing all that money into this campaign, frankly, cares that much about a better America. I think he's got a very much more narrow agenda. But anyhow, Curtis Sliwa, CurtisSliwa.com is the website. Thanks for being with us, Curtis.
My pleasure, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
He paid almost no tax.
He hid the stash.
It was the Romney stash. From his numbered accounts in the Swiss Alps East to the Wall Street banks where the vampires feast. All the union saps all lost their abodes and got a jolt from Mitt's friends, the Kochs. They gave the Romneys cash.
I love it. Who's that from, Shane?
It was a right way.
Rocky Mountain Mike. It's great. Susan in Brunswick, Georgia. Hey, Susan. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom, and best wishes to you and your wife.
Oh, thank you. Louise is back to work. She's here in the studio today. So.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
Well, many kisses to her. I have a really important question to ask you that's been on my mind, and I'd really like your opinion on it. Do you think that this country will ever default on its loan?
No.
And why is that?
Because we are one of the richest countries on Earth. We have natural resources that are worth hundreds of trillions of dollars. We have economic activity that is absolutely massive. If we simply rolled back the Reagan tax cuts, both his corporate and his personal tax cuts, we would have such a huge surplus. We would be able to pay down our debt in almost nothing. You know, when George W. Bush came into office, and Jim or Shane, whoever's got this, cue this thing up. This was George W. Bush in his inaugural address saying that he's going to pay off the national debt. And it's going to take just a second to track this down. But
I remember he did say that.
Yeah, and he actually, those were the real numbers. I mean, Bill Clinton did was raise taxes on rich people by 3%, from 36 to 39%. That's all he did, basically. And just with that, we were able to pay off the entire national debt. And keep in mind, Ronald Reagan himself, Reagan alone, had run up more debt than every other president from George Washington and Jimmy Carter combined. And Bush was going to pay it off. So, Susan, thank you for the call. And here's George W. Bush. This is the condition the country was in when Bill Clinton left. This is George W. Bush, you know, in March of 2001, when, you know, after just a few months after he took office, looking at this enormous surplus that Bill Clinton had left him, he's going to pay off the national debt. Here you go.
Many of you have talked about the need to pay down our national debt. I listened, and I agree. We owe it to our children and grandchildren to act now. And I hope you will join me to pay down $2 trillion in debt during the next 10 years. At the end of those 10 years, we'll have paid down all the debt that is available to retire. That is more debt repaid more quickly than has ever been repaid by any nation at any time in history.
So, you know, I mean, he was ready to do it. We were going to be a debt-free country. And then what did he do? He cut taxes on the wealthy, which accounts for about a third of the total deficit. He declared two wars and put them on the credit card. Didn't even put them on the budget. Obama at least put them on the budget so we could see where the numbers were. He declared two wars and another couple $1 trillion. That jacked up the debt and the deficit. And then he pushed through the Medicare Part D, which was designed, frankly, to destroy Medicare, where they said, okay, if Medicare buys a drug, they have to pay three or four times what the Veterans Administration pays for it because they have to pay retail instead of being able to negotiate wholesale prices, which is still the law, by the way, which is totally bizarre. And people say Medicare is in trouble. Well, let them negotiate for the damn drugs. They won't be in trouble anymore. Social Security is in trouble. Oh, they're not in trouble. They're going to be solvent for the next 25 years or thereabouts, and 80% forever. And if you did, and if you simply had people making over $250,000 paying, or over $110,000 right now, that's where the point at which it stops paying into the Social Security trust fund. You know, the same percentage of their income as everybody else, it would be there. So I am frankly not at all worried about this country ever defaulting on our debts. It is a non-issue. It is Republican hysteria and has been since the 40s. So, or the 50s in particular. Steve in River Forest, Illinois. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, I heard you say that you had a single-issue passion for instant runoff voting, and I thought I'd call. If I had the opportunity to ask these candidates, the president and Mitt Romney, one question, I would like to ask them, how do they feel about ranked voting, and what does it mean for their party?
Yeah, it would be a great question. The problem with that, and a good one on you, Steve, and the problem with that is that most people watching wouldn't have any idea what you're talking about. And, of course, both the major parties are opposed to it, but I still think it's a great thing. The other thing that I find is amazing, I saw a piece this morning, Tom Tancredo, who used to be a regular on our program, Republican when he was Republican congressman from Colorado. We're going to try and get him back on. It's been a while. It's been a year or two since I've talked to him, since he retired from the Congress. He was always a reliable, you know, debate sparring partner and an honest guy, I think, you know, from his point of view. He has come out in favor of marijuana decriminalization. And increasingly, this is the position that Republicans are taking, libertarian-leaning Republicans are taking. And if Democrats don't jump on this bandwagon, they're going to start losing. And if the president in the debate tonight were to come out and say, you know, I think that medical marijuana should be decriminalized, and I think that we should be doing research into this. There's substantial research now that even occasional use of marijuana might even prevent cancer, much less, you know, dealing with things like chemotherapy and all these, and glaucoma and MS and Lou Gehrig's disease, all these things. Let's look at that. He would immediately, there's no doubt in my mind, if Obama took that position, he would win the election. Unfortunately, I don't think he's going to take that position. Bob in Renton, Washington. Hey, Bob, what's up? We got a minute for the break.
Hi, Tom. Hey, thanks so much. I'm looking forward tonight to the debates, and I'm really looking forward to the contrast between Obama's first appearance and his second appearance tonight. But I think that it was really a calculated position of Obama to allow Mr. Romney to ramble on and on and on, really going unchallenged, because... Mr. Romney was speaking, he was speaking as the GOP president candidate, and he was doing it in the forum of the debate. So tonight,
I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around the idea that Obama is going to give up a 5-point lead as part of a strategy to win.
Well, I think that he allowed Mr. Romney basically to go unchallenged, so because Mr. Romney changed his position on a number of key issues.
Right, and that's the problem. When the guy that you're debating just starts throwing stuff out and throwing as much, you know, I call it the spaghetti against the walls thing. You know, they throw as much stuff as they can against the wall. You can't deal with all of it. You can't catch all of it. You can't point it all out. And when there are lies, and you know that they're lies, but there's, you know, you have no fact checker standing next to you, what do you do? I mean, it's a really tough one.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So last time, Romney immunized himself against his own lies by saying that his boys tell lies. How is Obama going to address the issue of lying tonight? I hope so. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, yeah, what's going on with the election? Where is this going to go? Logan in New York City. Logan, your thoughts on the issue?
Yes, I was wondering why we're not bringing up more often the obvious analogy between the Bain model of companies and the Republican model for our economy. It seems like over the last 30 years we've been getting the Bain treatment.
Yeah, squeeze dry the middle class and let all the riches go to the top.
Yeah, and I just think that this, I think I'm afraid that Obama's going to be using this strategy of trying to convince us that, no, Mitt Romney's a hardcore right-winger, but thing is, nobody believes that. They know he's a corporate raider. And also, he seems like he wants to go and say, oh, no, he's a flip-flopper, but let's face it, moderates don't really care about flip-flopper. And
right.
And also, it just
And neither
like,
do hardcore conservatives, because they believe in the virtuous lie theory.
Yeah, and if he tries to go after the philosophical underpinnings of his economic plan, he can just smile and say, I have 6 studies that contradict you.
Right.
Seems like the only way he can win this debate is if he points to the 8 years of Clinton and compares it to the 8 years of Bush, and that refutes every single lie that Mitt Romney tries to tell about the economy, and he keeps hitting this Bain idea that, do you want to get Bained? Come
yeah.
on, folks, do you want this country to impose austerity on workers to make money just for rich people?
Yeah, let's turn Bain into a verb. Good one, Logan. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Whoops, and I double-clicked, and I just dropped Lee. Lee, I'm sorry. Call back. Darius in Chula Vista, California. Hey, Darius, what's on your mind?
Hi. I'm an undecided voter. I won't be decided until election night, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Last time around, I voted for Cynthia McKinney. I voted for Cynthia McKinney because I knew that whether I voted for Obama or not, he would get the same number of electoral votes.
Right, because you live in California. That's why
yeah.
I voted for Ralph. I mean, that's not why I voted for Ralph Nader when I lived in Vermont in 2000. I did because I wanted the Green Party to get some federal matching funds. But
exactly.
Yeah.
And of course, the other issue around that is as soon as they get to 15%, they're going to raise the bar to 20%. That's another matter.
Well, I don't know. It's
day,
been a 15% for 3 decades. I think 15% is absurd. I think it should be 5%.
Well, yeah, it used to be 5%, but as soon as they got 5%, they raised it to 15%. Probably the same thing's going to happen.
Well, it was 15% in 92, because that's what Ross Perot had to hit.
Exactly.
So, I don't know when it was less than that.
But at any rate, I just
Teddy Roosevelt was like, over 20%. I mean, with the Bull Moose Party, it's amazing what he had. Of course, that wasn't to get into debates and things, just the vote, how much of the vote he pulled. But your point is a well taken one and
sure.
well thought out. Thank you, Darius, for that call. That's an interesting one. Johnny in Vacaville, California. Hey, Johnny, what's up?
I have a question for the debate tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It's this, for both of them, I would ask, how can the U.S. ever reach oil or gas independence, no matter how much we drill, no matter how many new pipelines we build, if we're exporting oil and gas to other countries?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And in fact, if the president were simply to – thank you, Johnny, for that. If the president were simply to point out that the largest export from the United States right now is gasoline and diesel fuel – and you want to know why your gas prices are going up? Because they're shipping it to Mexico, they're shipping it to China, they're shipping it to England. We're selling gasoline to England, and we're doing the refining here? I mean, say what? Brady in Helotes, Texas? Helotes?
Yes, Helotes. Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
My question was why we only hear 2 voices in the entire debate leading up to the presidential election. Why it's only been, chiseled down to Barack and Romney.
Yeah, well, I think that because the two-party system is an artifact a consequence of first-past-the-post, winner-take-all voting, it's because of the way that our Constitution was put together. And you know, at the time that they did it, that the founders did this, and James Madison kind of shepherded the process, he's referred to as the father of the Constitution, it was the best they could come up with. And it wasn't until, you know, 70 years later that John Stuart Mill came up with the idea of proportional representation, where instead of the person who gets the most votes gets all the you know, 100% of the seat. Instead, let's aggregate all the seats together. In other words, you got 435 seats in Congress, in the House of Representatives, or 435? Yeah, 435 plus 100, 535, yeah. If you got 435 seats in the House of Representatives, and instead of saying, okay, you vote in this district for this guy, how about, let's see how many votes you get for each party. It could be state by state, or it could be nationwide, and we could do proportional representation in the United States. We could do it actually without amending our Constitution, but it would take a lot of changes in our voting laws. But that's why. It's because we have first past the post, winner take all elections. We're one of only seven countries in the world that does. Most of them, if a party gets 3% of the vote, they get 3% of the seats in parliament. They get 9% of the vote, they get 9% of the seats in parliament. And that's why you see all these countries that have all these political parties. Chad in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Chad, what's up?
Tom, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm just curious. I am a Republican. I'll be voting for Mitt Romney in 3 weeks' time. And so, but I respect different opinions. But I'm just curious. I hear the demonizing of Romney, but I don't hear any sort of kind of vetting of what the president has done the last 4 years. I hear a lot of talk about Bush, compare Bush to Clinton and those type things. But we have 4 years of this president and 6,000 trillion in debt that we have on the books, but I'm just curious where the ideas are on how things will be different the next 4 years than they've been these past 4 years.
Okay, well, Obama has given us the largest middle class tax cut in history. He saved Chrysler, he saved GM. We went from losing 800,000 jobs a month under the Bush Romney plan to now 40, I think it is, straight months of net job creation in the private sector. If you took the 600,000 jobs that have been laid off, people who have been laid off or fired in the Republican states by Republican governors, and added those back in, unemployment would be down below 7%. He's increased education spending. He's taken the student loan business out of the hands of the banksters, and who were, by the way, being 100% guaranteed by the government, and said, this is silly. If we're going to guarantee it, why are they making a profit off it? And that freed up an additional $60 billion to give out to people as student loans. The Republicans are trying to roll that back in Congress. He strengthened our hate crimes laws. The Affordable Care Act, I think, is a big deal. It's a huge deal. It's insane that we're the only country in the developed world that doesn't provide health care to all of our employees. Even Mitt Romney took that position as governor of Massachusetts, and for years thereafter, he expanded the child health program. He enforced the child labor laws. He reformed Wall Street. He reformed credit card laws. I mean, I can give you a long list. He ended predatory lending to the troops. He started paying the troops for stop loss time. George Bush wouldn't do that. He stopped torture. He increased spending on the Veterans Administration. He's allowing women to serve on submarines. You get equal pay for women, Lilly Ledbetter, nuclear arms reduction and disposal. BP got BP to agree to a $20 billion cleanup. He strengthened the EPA. He's got the 9/11 responders health care funded, which the Republicans were fighting. These are all positive things. I'm curious why you would be voting for Mitt Romney.
That's a great list that you have there, but yet I thought he was going to cut the deficit in half. I thought unemployment was going to be under 5% at this point in time. People in the state of Ohio.
Those were not things that President Obama said. Those are things that the people on Fox say that President Obama said that were being said by people who are Democrats or in the administration. Chad, let me finish a sentence here. Those are things that were being said by the surrogates. But nonetheless, the administration themselves will tell you. Jared Bernstein will tell you. He was, I met with the guy a year into the administration. He was the guy who wrote the recovery plan that got us out of a Great Depression and just turned it into a recession. That when they first came into office, they didn't realize how bad it was. Because it hadn't been seen by anybody who was alive. The last time we had a complete collapse of the financial sector was in 1929. There was nobody alive left over from that who really knew what was going on. And so what they did is, there were some of us who were saying it ain't enough. I mean, you got Paul Krugman, a Nobel Prize winning economist, saying you've got a $3 trillion hole blown in the side of the economy by 30 years of Reaganomics and Bush policies and the deregulation of the financial sector. And you're going to try and patch that with the $700 billion stimulus, 0.7 trillion. It's not going to work. You're going to stop the bleeding, but you're not going to repair the economy. So you're not going to get it back to 4 or 5% unemployment.
Let me understand your argument then. When President Obama sat on the Today Show with Matt Lauer and said, if I don't turn this around in 4 years, this is a one-term.
He has turned it around. He has turned it around. He radically turned it around. We went from losing 800,000 jobs a month to 40 straight months of job growth.
I was very polite in letting you finish. I'm just trying to make a point, and it's your show, and you can go back to it at that point. He said unemployment would be under 5% if we just. So he didn't understand how grave the situation is.
And for all but 2 months and 1 day of his presidency, the Republicans have been filibustering. They've had a majority in the Senate, more than 60 votes in the Senate. They have successfully filibustered over 300 times. I gotta tell you an amazing story about Harry Reid right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, it's not like there wasn't a shortage. A year ago, the president put forward a Jobs Act that would have dropped unemployment by at least 1.5%. The Republicans filibustered it over and over and over again. The Republicans have been filibustering these things.
I read the news today, oh boy.
Oh, let's check into the news here. This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at free-don.org. Ellen Ratner with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, what's going on?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tom, you were just talking about Social Security, and today the figures came out for the cost of living increase for Social Security. It's only going up by 1.7% in 2013. In 2012, it went up 3.6%. There are some Democrats that are saying, let's look at the spending by seniors to see if this covers what's really going on.
Yep.
62 million Americans are on Social Security. And what's really fascinating is that Part D is not tied to the cost of living. So that is essentially the drug thing. So that can go up a huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not controlled under COLA.
That's interesting. The other point that Bernie Sanders makes in this program over and over again is that when they do those COLA calculations, they include things like computers. And, you know, the price of computers is constantly dropping relative to their processing speed and power. And you know, for elderly people, retired people, people in nursing homes, whatnot, price of computers is not the issue. It's food, housing, and medication.
Exactly. That is correct. And so the cost of living, that's why they said, where are seniors really spending money?
Right.
That's what the Democrats are asking. Speaking of the Democrats, as you know, they're keeping the House and Senate open, particularly so the president can't make any recess appointments.
Mm-hmm.
So there was supposed to be a pro forma session today, but Representative Connolly of Virginia and Representative Carnahan of Missouri said that they wanted to go on the floor. They wanted to talk about getting the Republicans back in to deal with the people's business, but they were gaveled out. The Democrats remained on the floor today.
So the Republicans are keeping the Congress in session to prevent President Obama from appointing judges and doing recess appointments. And yet, when the Democrats come along and say, Congress is in session, okay, let's talk some business, the Republicans say, shut up, sit down, go away.
That's exactly right.
Amazing.
It is pretty amazing. The Supreme Court today refused to hear the Ohio Secretary of State's case on early voting. As you know, the Ohio Secretary of State, they made a law in Ohio that said that you would have to stop early voting or absentee voting 3 days before the election unless they were a veteran, unless it was coming from overseas or veteran. And the Secretary of State went into court to try and enforce that law. The Democrats went against it, said it was essentially voter suppression. Supreme Court would not overturn that law today. I mean, would not overturn the lower court and the appellate court's opinion. So early voting is going to continue up to the day of, as it is actually in New York and other states. And now the Ohio Democratic Party is asking the Secretary of State Mr. Secretary of State, we want you to post the hours that those polls are going to be open.
Has the Secretary of State responded?
Not yet.
I'm guessing he's saying, I'll get back to you in the middle of November.
All right. I'm sure, and I'm sure that's going to go back to court again on this one.
Oh, my. Okay.
Okay, some other news. Of course, the debate is tonight. There is Richard Williamson. He was under Bush 43, one of the ambassadors of the United Nations. As you know, there's about four or five of them. He was the ambassador for political affairs, and he is saying that Governor Romney is going to ask Obama to man up and say, why can't we have transparency about the attacks in Benghazi?
You mean the attacks in Benghazi that killed the two security officers who were with the two diplomats?
That's right.
Somehow everybody forgets that two of the four people who were killed were the security detail, number one. And number two, that the Republican Party, including Paul Ryan, voted against more money for more security.
And the meme on talk radio, my friend, is all of this material that somehow Hillary Clinton is taking the fall for the president. And that's just not the case. I mean, first of all, if anything she's taking a fall for, it's for her saying the buck stops with me in the year 2016, where everybody actually thinks that she is going to run.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I mean, I think, frankly, what they're trying to set up is Whitewater. If Obama wins another term, they're going to try and use this Benghazi thing as the device to try to impeach him. I put me on record, I'll put money on it. Anyhow, back to you.
Back to me. Henry Waxman is trying to put forth a bill, and what he is saying that he wants to reduce the antibiotic use of in food feed for animals. He said that he wants information on animal food for human consumption, the amount and types of antibiotics. He wants the drug manufacturers who do this, how it's used at farms, what feeds it's in, and what amounts. I don't think Congressman Waxman is going to get very far with this in a Republican Congress, but he can certainly try. Meanwhile, also, Goldman Sachs is received a third quarter profit, $1.46 billion on $8.35 billion with a B in revenues.
Wow. So they're doing very well. Thank you very much.
Doing very well.
The banksters have bounced back.
The economy.
Yeah. The banksters have all bounced back.
That's for sure. And also, there's a lot of talk today about Candy Crowley disregarding the rules. Both campaigns say that she is disregarding the rules. However, the Committee on Presidential Debates say that they did not sign anything with the rules. And as you know, they have published now the actual things that these people have signed. And so that is both campaigns have signed, and that is what we are going to see today.
But Candy didn't. And by the way, I've had some people tell me that it's pronounced Crowley. I've always pronounced it Crowley, but crow like the bird. Lee and Louise was noticing some different pronunciations this morning on different networks. She didn't
Lindsey
sign.
Graham is still going after the issue on Libya. He's been all over the news today on that issue.
Yeah, there you go. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
This report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at free-don.org. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Supreme Court has ruled that the early voting, you can in Ohio, the big battleground state, you can vote on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday before the Tuesday election, which is a big deal because it's like 2,100% more African-Americans than white people vote early voting, in large part because it's hard, you know, if you're working a blue-collar job, it's harder to get Tuesday off. you know, if you're working a white collar job, and this, you know, this is still the legacy of generations of legal apartheid and prior to that slavery. So the Republicans, when they realized that African Americans were more likely to vote on the weekends and that the Caucasian voters were more likely to vote on Tuesday, they said, oh, well, let's do away with the weekend voting. Supreme Court today said, no, you're not going to do away with that. So Fox News then falsely claimed that the Obama campaign, this from Democratic Media Matters, actually, here it is. Just minutes after the Supreme Court ruled to allow early voting in Ohio the weekend before Election Day, Fox News host John Scott falsely claimed that the Obama campaign sought to stop military voter families from early voting in the state. Scott further botched the state's early voting history when he claimed that Democrats sought to limit early voting when, in fact, it was Republicans. Jeez. Fox News lied? I'm astounded. How did this happen? Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's on your mind?
Hey, don't forget that Fox got away in Florida with lying and a judge sanctioned it.
Oh yeah, that was Fox
hormone in milk.
Yeah, that was not Fox News. Fox so-called news, however, that was a Fox TV station. But you're right. It's then they're both owned by Rupert Murdoch. You're right. So what's up, Armin?
I'd just like to say that what I see as the biggest problems facing the average American in this country, economically speaking, are because of free trade, open borders, and endless wars. And then you take the global banksters and the industrial military complex and the oil services industry, and Romney, he's all about enhancing their interest and their power, and that's the last thing we need to do to change the direction of this country. And I agree with you that Obama hasn't been perfect, but look at what he had handed to him. And did you see the report on Rachel Maddow that Obama and Bill Clinton drove the deficit, slowed it down the most as two sitting presidents out of the last five or six? And the Republicans all drove up the deficit up.
Yeah.
And
no, I didn't see that report,
Clinton and Obama both slowed it down. She had a chart on it. It was fascinating. I believe it was last night that showed this, and some brilliant person, some college genius, devised that chart and showed it, and it's like a factoid that a lot of people don't realize, because, you know, the news is anything but the news anymore. It's all corporate profiteers and, you know.
And infotainment.
You did a marvelous job defending Obama. I can't thank you enough. God bless you and your wife for everything that you've done. I don't always agree with you, and you know I'm kind of a take no prisoners at times in opposition to some of your more liberal views, but still, I think you're a saint.
Well, thank you.
I really have a lot of respect and
Louise
honor for you and Louise.
Thank you.
And all the people that work for you.
Thank you.
God bless your health.
Thank you. And let me toss the same back at you. The very best to you and your wife and your family, Armin. And thank you for calling. And thanks for listening to the show for all these, for the 9 years you've been calling in regularly. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Adam in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Adam, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Look, I wanted to, I know this whole Freeport thing has been talked about a lot, and that ties in a lot to your free trade.
Freeport, you're talking about Sensata, the company that Bain bought and is now shipping off to China?
Exactly. But, Tom, the other side of that story was I heard one of these Sensata employees talking. They said the other big employer in Freeport is Titan Tires. Now, Titan Tires was helped by Obama administration tariffs on Chinese tires, which they started in 2009.
Right.
And I saw a Wall Street Journal article. The owner of Titan Tires that is in Freeport and other parts of the Midwest said that, like, that those Chinese tariffs on Chinese tires saved, like, 1,000 jobs. So to me, like, Freeport is like the election in a microcosm there. Obama policies to protect workers, to help local industries by tariffs, and, you know, similar sort of thing happened with the auto bailout as well, compared to Romney's free-for-all, you know, sending, jobs to China, whatever makes, you know, your venture capitalists your money.
Yeah, excellent point and well said. Thank you very much, Adam. Thanks for that. Melissa in Streator, Illinois. Is that how it's said?
Streator. Yes.
Streator. Hey, Melissa, what's up?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to comment on your Republican caller earlier, where when you gave him that very extensive list of accomplishments by the current administration, and he only could come back with two things, that, you know, we still had a $6 trillion deficit and that the unemployment rate was still high. But, you know, he doesn't, you know, the Republicans, they don't mention the housing market, you know, that it's turned around, and that's a very good barometer for how the economy is going right now.
Yeah.
And with, you know, construction on the rise and foreclosures, you know, going down, that kind of shows that the economy is turning around under this administration. And
yeah.
Also, on the last debate with Romney, he kept, you know, saying, well, in Massachusetts, you know, education, we were top in education, and in Massachusetts, we had health care. But he never brought up the job creation in Massachusetts, because if I'm not mistaken, weren't they towards the bottom?
Yeah, either 47 or 49th out of 50 states, yeah.
And so if, you know, he did such a great job in Massachusetts, they could also bring up, well, why aren't you winning your state? Why aren't you proposed to win?
Right. He left the governor's office with 35% approval rating, as I recall. And by the way, they had the best schools in the country when he came in as governor. So it's not a surprise that they were in the top five when he left. But, you know, Romney Care, I think you have to give him some credit for that, although it was the Democrats who were really pushing that. But he was a Republican governor who was willing to go along with it. So, and let's point out, it was a Heritage Foundation suggestion that had, in a slightly varied form, been originally proposed by Richard Nixon in 1972, so, or 73 maybe it was. So, Melissa, thank you. Very, very well, very well said. Mike in Sacramento, California, listening on iTunes. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you had a guest on earlier today. I think she said it was Curtis. He's another
Curtis
radio host.
He's the guy who started the Red Beret, Guardian Angels.
Yeah. So he mentioned that he was tired of the lies on both sides. And I'm wondering an example of what are some of the lies on the left.
He said that Obama is lying about Benghazi.
That's it? That's his whole thing?
That's what he had.
Because I hear that all the time, you know, and I'm just, tell me something. Am I that gullible that I believe everything I'm hearing? And But I listen to other hosts, and they give us facts like you do, and I don't just have to believe it whole cloth, you know. I can check it out. But the other ones, it's just total lies on the right, and I just don't get it.
Well, yeah, I don't get it either, and I didn't get it in 1980 when I watched the Reagan-Carter debates and heard Ronald Reagan over and over and over again making comments, you know, making promises, making claims that I didn't believe were either possible or true, and Jimmy Carter, you know, basically trying to be a high-integrity guy and hold the presidency. And I'm very concerned about a sitting president being attacked by a man who's willing to lie and say anything to become president. And I'm just very concerned about that. We're going to see how it plays out tonight. So I'm going to hold my commentary until tomorrow, 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In this corner, the President of the United States. In this corner, an Etch-a-Sketch. Coming up tonight. Today's show is underwritten by my favorite investigative reporter, Greg Palast, and his new bestseller, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. Greg Palast investigates Karl Rove, the Koch gang, and their buck buddies. Check it out. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Mark in Quincy, Mass. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom. I love your program, and thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you. But?
Tom, hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I saw the first debate, and the first thing I thought was, wow, Mitt Romney lied a lot. Mm-hmm. That was my first reaction, was he lied a lot. I didn't count it, but I take your word that it was 27 times.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I knew the president looked down. I thought he was taking notes every time Mitt Romney lied.
He was. He was
going to.
He was going to rebut them, but the format and the moderator never gave him an opportunity to rebut the lies. It was just always something new, you know?
And I knew the president looked tired, but, I mean, he's got the toughest job in the world. I mean,
yeah.
Why shouldn't he look tired? But what I was thinking was that, Mitt Romney lied, and he was really, really rude to the moderator. And I don't understand what's wrong with this country that everybody thinks Romney won the debate. And I'm wondering, is the media sort of, are they run by people who don't want their, rich people who don't want their taxes cut?
Of course.
Is that why they're not reporting, they're not making a big deal about
it's
all
not,
the lies?
It's not just that the corporate media is owned by big transnational corporations, and it's not just that the average, you know, major network TV anchor is making somewhere between $2 and $10 million a year. And therefore, you know, they are members of a certain economic class just right from the get-go, right? I mean, just
exactly.
Anybody that you see on major television, that's what you're looking at. But it's not just that. It's also that the networks show the greatest profit when they have the most advertising. And right now, you know, during the political season, a great source of revenue for the advertising is these outside expenditures. Now, they're actually, if the campaigns buy advertising, the law says that the networks, the TV stations, have to offer them at the lowest prevailing price. But when the outside folks like Karl Rove come in, they can charge them anything they want, or they can charge them the highest price, and they typically do. So what has happened is that this has become insanely profitable for the media, and therefore they want a horse race. If it's clear that one candidate or the other is winning, then what you're going to see, and I've been saying this for a year, I have warned you guys over and over and over again. I don't mean to personalize this to you, but I've said this over and over and over again. The media, the corporate media in the United States, will not tolerate a candidate being dramatically out ahead of another candidate if it's in a race where there's a lot of potential advertising dollars at stake, particularly the White House.
That's kind of what I've been thinking too. And as far as Ryan and Biden, I mean, Biden absolutely clobbered him, and all they want to talk about is, oh, Biden laughed, or Biden was disrespectful.
Right.
And they don't want to talk about the fact that Biden clobbered Ryan,
right,
and Ryan wouldn't give a straight answer
it's
on
a
lot
horse,
of things. And,
they've got it up to President Obama's poor debate performance, or Mitt Romney's spectacular lying performance, however you want to characterize it, this race to a horse race. And now all of these groups are starting to pour enormous amounts of cash into the TV stations, into the networks, that they were holding back a lot of it before, or might have been putting it in congressional races, or they were putting it into the ground game, or they were putting it into billboards. Now they're being forced to throw it into TV because they've got this horse race. And, you know, I have seen this over and over and over again. And I think, you know, if Obama is ahead, you're going to see the media promoting Romney. If Romney's ahead, you're going to see the media promoting Obama, and it's going to go that way right up to Election Day, because they want everybody right on the edge of their seat right up until the election is called that night. And it's not about, you know, to some extent, it's about, you know, you've got billionaires and billionaire corporations owning the media, and you've got millionaires all on TV. But mostly it's about where those billions came from, which is the advertising. So, Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Bart, listening on Sirius in Austin, Texas. Hey, Bart, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I just stumbled on you on XM. I just want to call and tell y'all thank you. As a conservative Texan, y'all have made me laugh all the way home for the last few days. I mean, it's just incredible that how naive y'all are and all the stuff y'all come up with. And I really appreciate it.
Bart, give me one example.
Oh, just the big media. I mean,
just
it's obvious.
One example.
You know, y'all trying to do what?
So you genuinely don't believe that the media has an interest in there being a horse race and that they will promote that horse race? You think that my conspiracy theory is crazy?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if anything, they've gone out of their way to cover for Obama. I mean, President Obama, excuse me. I mean, just look at the Libya. I mean, they try to cover this up. I mean, they're
cover what up?
For Obama.
Cover what up?
And I think.
Wait a second. What are they trying to cover up here, Bart? Are they trying to cover up the fact that Paul Ryan voted to cut security in our embassies? Is that what you're talking about?
The, what they're covering up is how the administration came out and said it was because of YouTube. And they knew that the lack of security, because the State Department didn't provide it and was denied, that it would be a...
Well, wait a second. Bart, you're misinformed. I suggest that you read a newspaper. The request for additional security was for Tripoli. It was not for Benghazi.
Well,
there was never a request for additional security in Benghazi. Never.
I think what we can agree on is there was a lack of security.
Well, you had two diplomats and you had two security guards. And okay. that's all that Paul Ryan would authorize the Congress would authorize. What do you want to do?
That's the first ambassador killed since 1979.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing. And the fact that you want to turn that into a partisan political event, I think is a shame. You talk about laughing about me all the way to the whatever it is. This is tragic that you guys are trying to turn the death of an ambassador and another aide, plus their two security guards, into something that is political. This is not political. This is the United States of America. These are our ambassadors. These are our diplomats. They're putting their lives on the line for us, and you're going to try and turn this into a cheap political talking point? And your guy, Romney, is going to try and do the same thing tonight? Shame on you. Shame on you. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, that reaches the point of... That goes beyond pathetic. That's tragic. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow. It is going to be an interesting night tonight. What, one of the questions we probably should ask today is, what will your, if you're going to have a drinking party, drinking contest, drinking, what's the phrase for that, Shana? Or, yeah, drinking game, yeah, where, every time somebody says something, you take a shot. I would not want to be the guy who does the drink, I would not take the position, I'm going to take a shot every time Mitt Romney tells a lie. Because I'd rather not die. Liver failure, right? I mean, alcohol's toxic. 50,000 people a year die from alcohol. It's Bill in Santa Maria, California. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I enjoyed your show. Listen, what the Democrats don't realize is this is show business. This is the era of show business.
Yep.
And that debate, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
That's right.
The demeanor. It's the visuals, and Obama's fumbling with these damn notes. He needs to throw those notes in the trash can. He's got enough in his head to answer any question. And so what if he lies or deviates a little bit from the truth? It's the way he does it, the way he says it. If you saw Romney looking like a hawk at Obama all during the talk.
He was doing the Vulcan stare down. Actually, what he was doing was, and I've seen this, any man has seen this. This was the, I've got more testosterone than you stare down. That's basically what was going on. And I think he was trying to intimidate the president, and I think he succeeded. Hang on just a second. Bill, you are, my software just went crazy. Bill, Shano says that you are the winner of a copy of Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People and How You Can Fight Back by me, autographed by the author. So I'm going to put you on hold here. In fact, I guess I already did. Oh, there we go. Danielle's gotcha. Mike in Arvada, Colorado. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Somebody on your show caught already the lie that Mitt told about your heart is where your money is. He got the quote wrong, of course. But I'm glad somebody on your show caught it because the campaign sure didn't seem to catch it.
Yeah, and it would have been such a perfect moment for Obama to say, oh, yeah, your heart's in the Cayman Islands?
Yeah, and Switzerland and China and who knows where else.
Yep, absolutely. Excellent point, Mike. Thank you very much for calling and making it.
I'm glad you guys got it, and I hope it gets to the debate.
Yeah, thank you. Good to hear from you. And Robert in New York, New York?
Yes, I just wanted to make one point. I thought it's important for Obama to ask Romney about his tax returns, so I was thinking of how he could do that, and one way would be to like, how could we afford a president to go into a war like Iran or something if he can't, if he's afraid to even release his tax report?
Yeah.
Could we trust him? Just based on that.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. The one thing that I want the president to stop doing, and thank you for that point, Robin, the one thing I want the president to stop doing is referring to himself as a rich guy. I mean, when he said, you know, people like you and me don't need tax breaks, Mitt Romney laughed. Because Obama, you know, Obama made $1 million because his book sold 3-4 million copies. I mean, you know, he's got a $400,000 or $500,000 a year job now, you know, as president of the United States. He's not a rich guy. I mean, I suppose for a kid who grew up in poverty, you know, whose mom was on welfare, he thinks of himself as a rich guy. But he's not a rich guy. Not by American standards, certainly not by Romney standards, and he needs to stop referring to himself that way, because I don't think the average American gets it. I think the average American knows that he and Michelle both had student loans just 5 years ago, just five or six years ago. And you know, they finally paid them off with the proceeds in the book, but he needs to start referring to Romney as the rich guy. Eric in Lake in the Hills, Illinois. Hey, Eric, what's on your mind?
How are you, sir?
Good. What's up?
I was calling to let you know that I teach in a school district north of Chicago in the North Shore area. It's a very wealthy school district.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on strike effective today because of contract negotiations, or I should say the lack thereof.
Oh, interesting. Now, the Chicago teacher strike was limited to the city of Chicago. You're suburban.
That's correct.
My understanding was that the suburban teachers were making a whole lot more than the inner city teachers. What's the basis for your strike?
Well, to start, they want to take away our entire salary schedule, not only the incremental year increases, but also they want to take away all credits for professional development, like master's degrees and beyond.
Right, right.
So essentially, what they want to give us would be, if you have a master's degree, it'd be roughly $250, and that would be it.
When are we going to learn? You know, the two countries that have the best educational outcomes in the world are Singapore and Denmark. Is it Denmark? I'm pretty sure it's Denmark. It's one of the Scandinavian countries. And the only thing that those two countries have in common, you know, Singapore is a dictatorship. Denmark, if it's Denmark, no, I think it's Finland, actually, now that I think about it. Let's say it's Finland. Whereas that's a democratic socialist country. It's a very, you know, small d democratic country. So what do they have in common? In those two countries, they pay their teachers about the same as they pay doctors. They've got some of the best paid, and they have very, very high standards for education. And here you're telling me, Eric, that if, as you try to improve your education, you know, the standards of the teachers, that they want to take that away. I think that's a tragedy. Eric, is there a website people go to learn more about, you know, what you guys are up to?
Absolutely. It's district112teachers.org.
Okay, great. District 112 teachers.
Real quickly, Tom, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to let everybody know that to punish us for going on strike today, the school board actually canceled our health insurance outright today.
Wow. That's incredible. Eric, thank you for sharing that story.
We're putting all of our families in jeopardy here. And,
indeed.
A very high-achieving school district.
Once again, what is the website?
District112teachers.org.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Eric, for the heads up. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Jim in White Salmon, Washington. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I really want to thank you guys for at least bringing a bit of light on the third party,
mm-hmm.
because we don't hear about it hardly at all. I mean, I've heard about it on Link TV, and I've been telling as many people as I can.
Well, there's third, fourth, and fifth parties. I mean, you got the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Constitutional Party.
The Green Party, the Justice Party. I heard the guy from the Justice Party, and I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, arrest the bankers,
yeah.
You know, stop the wars. They're talking everything.
Yeah.
And when Obama and...
Except that they want to end Social Security.
They do?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that.
I mean, I'll have to go back and look at the Justice Party. I know in detail the Libertarian Party's positions.
Well, it's just like an attack on all the people. They're not attacking corporations; they're just attacking the people, and this
yeah.
is just an ongoing thing.
Yeah. Well,
and,
there's a real simple answer to this, Jim. We have an electoral system in the United States that basically forces a two-party system. It's the way our Constitution, you know, which is one of the oldest in the world, was written. And so if you want to see that kind of progressive change, you know, positive progressive change, show up at the local Democratic Party meeting and say, I'd like to become a precinct committee person. Precinct committee people are the most powerful people in America. They choose who are going to be the primary candidates. And then, of course, the primary candidates out of them is winnowed the regular candidate, and out of that comes the members of Congress. And this is how the Tea Party took over the Republican Party in just 3 or 4 years, is they got their people in as precinct committee persons and chairpersons inside the Republican Party, and we need to be doing the same thing in the Democratic Party.
And that was if they were allowed. I mean, you look at what
happened. No, no. You just show up with enough people, and these are in some cases you can just volunteer because nobody else wants to do it. Because, you know, but in other cases, if it's contested, it's an election. And so you show up with a bunch of friends who are all registered as Democrats and say, here we are, you know.
Yeah. And one other point I'd like to mention. If these guys are sitting there beating their chest about going to war, standing with strong with Israel, make sure that they volunteer their kids for the draft, because it's got to happen.
Yeah. Well, let's start a draft to begin with. That's where. And thanks, Jim, for the call. That's where Charlie Rangel and I are just like this on that. Zach in Hogden, Oklahoma. Hey, Zach, what's up?
Yeah, it's actually Hodgen.
Hodgen.
Everybody pronounces it wrong. But it's a fact that the legalization of marijuana has had more support than Mitt Romney and Barack Obama and any other candidate. And
I agree.
I'm 14. But with the younger generation, about my age and older, marijuana is a lot more popular than alcohol. So.
And I think it's more popular than gay marriage. I think that if President Obama was to do the same, you know, I mean, he took a very brave stand by standing up to conventional wisdom and many people in his own party and saying that he was supportive of gay marriage. He needs to also say that he is supportive of, at the very least, medical marijuana, or he's going to stop the enforcement of, you know, against these medical marijuana clinics. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it just seems so obvious that if Mitt Romney or Obama were just to simply announce it, that they were in favor of it, or if they were going to try to do something about it, and instead of imprisoning this and spending so much money on just putting innocent people in jail. And anyways, I think one of the reasons they won't legalize it is because alcohol sales would go down, no one would be depending on prescription pills with all these side effects. And no one's going to be wanting to harm themselves with tobacco.
Right.
And also, law enforcement and police officers aren't going to have anything to do if they can't empty all the kids' pockets out.
Well, and your private prisons are going to lose a lot of revenue. It's one of the fastest growing industries in the United States is private prisons, and they rely on drug convictions to make those things. And then they cut these deals with states where they say, you've got to guarantee us a certain number of inmates for at least a 10 or 20 year period. It's crazy. But you're absolutely right, Zach. The first party that embraces legalization or decriminalization of pot is really going to start winning elections.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, I would submit that probably a very, very large chunk of the reason why the Libertarian Party has gotten so much traction over the last few years is because of that one issue.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right.
So, taking our country back one congressional district at a time. Today, our guest is Joe McCloskey. It's spelled M-I-K-L-O-S-K-I. And that's important because that's his website. It's Joe, J-O-E, McCloskey, M-I-K-L-O-S-I. I misspelled it the first time, didn't I, Joe?
Yes, that's okay.
Okay. Mick, M-I-K, Losi, L-O-S-I.
That's right.
Okay. .com is the website.
Yep.
And you are a state...
JoeMcCloskey.com.
JoeMcCloskey.com. And you are a state representative in the great state of Colorado running for Congress from Colorado.
And, Tom, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I think you're the smartest guy on radio.
Well, thank you, Joe. That's very kind of you. Tell us about you. You know, where have you been? Where are you going? Why are you running for this seat? And why should people go to J-O-E, Joe McCloskey, M-I-K-L-O-S-I.com, and check out your website?
Well, Tom, again, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I was raised in a middle-class family. My dad was a school teacher for 33 years, kindergarten through art, through sixth grade art. And my mom was a waitress for 35 years, many days working a double shift so my older brother and I could have more opportunity in life. And I've always believed that if you work hard and play by the rules, that your unique version of the American dream can come true and that you can utilize your God-given talents to achieve that dream, whether it's to start a business or attend college or any other dream. And I really believe in my heart of hearts, Tom, that the American dream is under attack by right-wing extremists like my Tea Party opponent, Mike Kaufman. I mean, here's a gentleman who compared Social Security to a Ponzi scheme, voted twice for the Paul Ryan Medicare destruction bills. Despite his distinguished military service, our opponent compared our president and commander-in-chief as un-American, or stated he was un-American, not an American in his heart. And he's joined Congressman Aiken of Missouri with the war on women and supports the Radical Personhood Amendment that would outlaw many forms of birth control and even outlaw abortion for rape and incest, and that's victims, and that's not where most Coloradans or Americans are. I'm focusing on some very Colorado common sense principles like Buy American legislation. I'm tired of shipping jobs overseas and incentivizing companies to do that. Secondly, renewable energy. We're the second sunniest state and the 11th windiest state in the country. I want to make this state, Colorado, the renewable energy capital of the country, and I really want to focus on small business loans and education funding. And that's why we're neck and neck in the polls, and that's why Karl Rove has been attacking me, because they're scared.
Wow. So Karl Rove has come into Colorado, and he's dumping money into your Joe. We're talking with Joe McClosey, M-I-K-L-O-S-I. JoeMcClosey.com is the website, and you got Karl Rove on your butt.
Yeah, we've had about three negative television advertisements in the last 3 weeks because we're doing that well. We have an incredible team, and the message has been well received by voters, especially unaffiliated voters, are the swing voters here in Colorado.
That's great. Well, I wish you the very best, and I encourage everybody to get over to your website, Joe, J-O-E, McClosey. Am I saying it right?
You sure are, sir.
M-I-K-L-O-S-I.com.
Tom, it's a privilege. I thank everyone for the support, and we're 3 weeks away from Victory Day.
There you go. Joe, thanks very much for being with us today.
Have a good day.
And I wish you the very best. I hope to talk to you on the air again soon. Let's see here. Robert. Whoops, wrong button. Robert in Reading, Pennsylvania. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Inevitably tonight, hopefully the tax policy comes up. And I'd like to see the president basically summarize exactly the 2 weeks prior what Mr. Romney had said, and basically give a coherent answer to illustrate the inconsistency that he has been spouting. That's one way I think he can not only connect, but again, that pause and summarizing will make the viewer listen to exactly what the potential question will be. Mm-hmm. I think that's one strategy I'd like to see tonight. The second thing with this Libyan Benghazi thing, all he needs to do is to say one thing, that the blame for the attack is from the insurgents, period. Much like George Bush did when he said 9/11, the responsibility is Osama bin Laden, period.
Right.
And I think that those are the ways that those are the things that they're going to come at him, or maybe the questions, and that's the way I would like to see our president respond. And then finally, just one last thing. I'm going to be watching the debate tonight with my 12-year-old daughter, who was enthralled with the vice presidential debate. Mm. And this time she wants to stay up till 10:30 till it's over. Suggestions?
I'd say, you know, let her do it.
She has to go to school tomorrow, though.
I know. Well, you know, what can you say? Kids do well with, you know, not so much sleep sometimes. But I don't want to tell you how to parent, Robert. But thank you for your call, and I hope you and your daughter have a great time watching the show tonight, or the debate. It tragically, it is a show. I mean, maybe not so tragically, but anyhow. Craig in Crestview, Florida. Hey, Craig, what's on your mind?
Well, I think his biggest problem, and his administration's biggest problem, is that if they shoot from the hip and that they answer when they probably shouldn't answer, and they say things without all the information. You can go back to, you know, Shirley Sherrod getting thrown under the bus when she shouldn't have been. You can go back to the whole professor and the cop thing where he took the side of the professor without knowing the story. and you can go to, you know, even like the Benghazi thing.
That's
point,
three examples out of 3 years. Are you using that as an indictment for the Obama presidency? I mean, these are minor. This is tiny stuff. This is tiny stuff. This is an administration that has fought to restore the middle class, to push back against the banksters. You've got major crimes going on in the United States in the banking industry. You've got people who are literally dying, 30, 40, 50,000 people a year dying because of lack of health insurance. And you're going to throw the president under the bus because his administration threw Shirley Sherrod under the bus for a short while? Come on. You know, enough of the phony Republican callers with their talking points. Coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program, we'll have reactions to the latest presidential candidates debate. What do you think? Plus, we'll have a conversation with the Daily Caller's Jamie Weinstein, who has a new book out about conspiracy theories, The Lizard King. No, he's not talking about Jim Morrison. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up, when you participate. It means more than just voting. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Get out there and occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.